Good evening, Council. It is 6:08 p.m., so I'm going to call this meeting to order. Please take your seats. Okay, thank you, everybody. Just a reminder, I'm going to go into the traditional territory acknowledgement. If you haven't been seated yet, please just wait until I have finished to take your seat. Okay, so with that, we will move into the acknowledgements. Cool. The University of Alberta and the University of Alberta Students' Union occupy Indigenous land in Amiskwichi Waskayakin, or Beaver Hills House, on Treaty 6 territory. From time immemorial, the banks along the river valley have been known as the Pohonan, a meeting place for the Nihiyawak, Cree, Niitsitapi, Blackfoot, Métis, Dene Suliné, Ojibwe, Soto, Anishinaabe, Haudenosaunee, and others. The university, the students' union, and much of the city are located on the unlawfully stolen land of the forcibly removed Papas Chase Cree. We acknowledge that sharing this land gives each of us the responsibility to research the historic contexts of Treaty 6, to reflect on our personal relationships to the land, the nations we've named, and to our roles in upholding justice on this territory. Since they began, the Students' Union and the university have benefited from historic and ongoing dispossession of land and resources from Indigenous peoples. As a result, it is our responsibility to seek the restitution of this land and its resources. Finally, we seek to do better by working to make our learning, research, and governance align with the histories, languages, teachings, and cultures of First Nations, Métis, and Inuit peoples in the land presently occupied by the Canadian state. We encourage critical reflection by asking the following question. In relation to the territory on which you are situated, what role do you play in strengthening the resistance and resurgence of Indigenous students within your communities? Okay, thank you. A quick oath reminder. So from now on, when I just remind us of the oath. I know as a guiding principle, this can seem abstract at times. So I'm going to relate it to a specific procedural rule that we follow just to really make that connection clear. So for today, the oath says, I will use Robert's rules for their purpose, not my own. And again, while every member has a right to bring motions forward to council, the speaker can rule motions out of order if they obviously try to obstruct council's business or are impossible to carry out. So again, please just be mindful of what you bring forward to this body. Levi.
Point of parliamentary inquiry.
Yes.
What version of Robert's Rules are we using now?
We are now using the 12th edition of Robert's Rules. We just received the full handbook or the full rule book today. There is also an in-brief version of the rule book in the council office available for all members. If you want to look at the full handbook or rule book, please just let myself or staff know. It's kept in the council bag. Thank you, Levi. Moving to speaker's business. I know CAC is right before this. Please try to show up right at 6 p.m. I've noticed we've started to start about 10 to 15 minutes late, and that just kind of impacts our end time often. So please be mindful of that. An exciting piece of information, I'm going to be organizing a small scavenger hunt in the council office. There will be prizes and riddles for you to solve. If you do not have access to the office yet, Courtney brought the one card scanner, so please see her during the recess. And just a reminder, I've received this from staff and committee chairs. Please keep your chairs looped in on important committee business. For example, resignations or things that would impact committee operation. It's important for chairs to be able to know what their quorum is and whether their committee will be able to complete their work. So please keep in communication. Another just quick note on parking expenses. Please try to submit those within a month of incurring them. I know it's just kind of like a housekeeping task that probably gets put off, but it'll just help our admin team and accounting team follow accounting best practices. If you have questions about that, please direct them to Courtney. Finally, just a message about clerks. We are encouraging them to ask questions at committee meetings if statements are unclear. So you might hear them speak up a bit more than they normally do, but also please just try to speak clearly at committee and in council. Please remember to use the microphones. And that concludes speakers' business for today. So we will move to attendance. Abner?
Present.
I'm always just way faster than Courtney's hands can move. Gerline?
Present.
Christian? Present. Julia?
Present.
Joanie?
Present.
Alex? Letitia? Abdul? Haroon? Rebecca?
Here.
Thank you. Leo?
Present.
Joshin? Fateh?
Present.
Levi?
Present.
Peen?
Present.
Jaden?
Present.
Paulina?
Present.
Chanpreet?
Present.
Medina? Medina, if that was you, could you please repeat that?
Present.
Okay, thank you. That was just very faint. Adrian?
Present.
Lionel? Colton? Colton? Ibuku?
Here.
Gabriella?
Here.
Daniela? Daniela, Charvi, Simran? Thank you. David?
Here.
Rana?
Present.
Thank you. Vedant? Vedant? Okay, and I am present, and Mark is also present. Oh, my apologies. Mobisher?
Present.
Thank you. Okay, with that, we will start moving into our meeting business. Before we proceed to the order paper, are there any preliminary matters, Haroon?
I would like to special order my item onto the order papers.
Okay, and could you just remind council which item that is?
Ali Singh moved to condemn the Iranian regime's violence against the people of Iran.
Okay, thank you. And that motion was submitted on the late additions. Is there a second to the motion to special order that to our order paper?
I think it's already seconded.
So the motion on the late additions is the motion to special order. It has not been. So Singh Chanpreet seconds. Okay, we will do a very short discussion of this. Haroon, would you like to introduce why this is pressing and urgent?
I'll be brief. It's one sentence. It's a human rights violation, and we have students here that are from Iran that may not be able to safely go home. So having the University of Alberta Students Union condemn this, I think, is important, especially because University of Alberta has already, so our silence has been quite odd amongst a lot of students. And so I think being clear about this is really crucial. I know that Abner has created a statement. I, once again, though, I think a condemnation is what's really important. So that is why I put this motion forward.
Okay, thank you. Are there any members wishing to speak in opposition? Levi?
Not against the content of the motion itself. Just as a reminder, council may designate any order of the day, a special order, if it cannot be postponed to a future meeting of Students' Council for resolution without risking serious and detrimental consequences to the Students' Union. I don't think much is going to change between now and 2 weeks from now. And the exec have already started working on a statement that's going to come from the Students' Union, since they are the spokespeople for the Students' Union. If this was truly that important, it would have been on the order papers for Friday or Thursday. So I don't see the need for just special order it.
Okay.
Despite being a very important thing that we should talk about.
Thank you. Haroon, are you wishing to?
Yeah, I'm just going to respond to that real quick. Once again, it's causing reputational damage to the University of Alberta Students Union. We're sitting silent on a human rights violation. And to Levi's point about me not submitting on the order papers, yes, that's my fault. But that does not mean that it should be bogged down in government, it should not be bogged down in our governance structures. This is really crucially important. Honestly speaking, we could have done this motion like in a minute or two. I think this is a motion that should have been on the consent agenda. That's my apologies. I would have included it next time. However, this is something I was talking with multiple students on, and I was frustrated by our silence on it. I put a motion onto the order papers. Yes, the executives are the spokesperson of the Students' Union. All we're doing here as a council, as a body, as a function of 33 members, we're saying that we condemn this. That is all we're doing here. So I would, I would appreciate us voting in favor of us condemning a human rights violation and doing it quickly in a timely manner would be my recommendation.
Okay, thank you very much. I will allow one more speaker in opposition to including this on our agenda. Are there any members wishing to oppose? Okay, seeing none, we will move into a vote. And a reminder, the motion is to special order agenda item 9B, which Haroon has described, to our order papers. This will require a two-thirds majority to pass. If you are opposed to this motion, please make it known by a show of hands. Okay, I see three in opposition. And I believe that meets the thresholds.
We have 23
Okay, so that motion passes and item 9B is added to our agenda as a special order. Okay, before we move on, is there any other preliminary business to address? Okay, seeing none, our next item of business is the consent agenda, which today includes votes and proceedings from our last meeting, as well as numerous appointments of student at large members to various committees. Is there any opposition to the consent agenda as it is presented? Okay, seeing none, the consent agenda is approved. And our next item of business is presentations. The first of which is Abner's and Christian's motion to allow a presentation from the Canadian Alliance of Student Associations, or CASA. Before we proceed, is there any opposition to this presentation? Okay, seeing none, the presentation is accepted.
Would you like me to do a little introduction while they get ready?
Yeah, while they set up, feel free.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Hello, Council. I'm very excited to welcome and introduce two members of the Canadian Alliance of Student Associations, Christian Fotang, who is our very own VP External, and also the chair of CASA, and Wasima Juman, who's the member relations officer, who does a lot of work with the different institutions across the country. And CASA is here today to give a presentation to our Students' Council about the work that they do, answer any questions that you have. And essentially they're our lobby group, our federal lobby group that we're a part of. And many of the conferences that me and Christian attend are related to CASA and the work that they do. So without further ado, I'll turn it over to them.
Okay, thank you very much. And just a reminder, you have 15 minutes. Please go ahead.
Perfect. Thank you so much. Thank you for having me in your council meeting to kind of chat about that. And I hope that you all had a chance to kind of review the presentation that was forwarded to you. But before I dig into it, if anyone has any pressing issues or questions, I'm happy to kind of entertain them. But I want this to be like an open conversation about the work that we do and also the work that Christian does as chair. So if no one has any questions, I'd be happy to briefly go through that presentation quickly. Perfect. I'll just ask that you go to the slide number 3. So that I can kind of go through like the details. The slide number, so sorry. Okay, the slide number would be 21. Yes, yeah. Oh.
I will pause your time. I don't want this to eat away at it.
Yeah, right here. Perfect. So I guess I kind of skip through the first few ones because they are, I think the slide kind of touches very in detail about what is CASA and what do we do. But I think I wanted to focus more about the work that we do and why I'm here to speak on behalf of that and why you should care and why it matters to your students. So in this picture itself, you can see that this is from foundations earlier in June, where our students from coast to coast came together and kind of discuss about the advocacy priorities that we'll touch on a little later in the presentation. So if you could slide to the next one. So this slide, I think, kind of does a pretty good job at like summarizing what CASA does in just a glance. So we have policy and research. We meet with politicians across on the Hill. We have consultation, stakeholder relations, media engagement, and campaigns. So I'll just go a little bit more into details in each of that, but feel free to ask any questions as well. So the first one is our policy and research paper. So here you can kind of see two of our recent papers. So when the pandemic hit, there was no research out there that shows how the pandemic impacted students, and CASA kind of took it on and decided to write a policy and research paper on that. So it kind of came in three prong, where at the beginning of the pandemic, there was a paper that came out, and then during the pandemic, and our latest publication, as you will see, The New Abnormal, got released last week, actually, and it kind of talks about student mental health 2 years into COVID-19. And I think what's unique about this is we see politicians and ministers referring to these policy papers because there's no research out there that specifically look at how the pandemic impacted post-secondary education. So I think that's like one thing that CASA kind of does, is like bringing the student statistics to the table when it comes to decision making. But on the right side of that slide, you could see our publication over the last couple of years. So we've talked about international student, student employment, student financial aid, and the way these papers, the topic for these papers are kind of decided is at Foundation, our first conference, our student leaders across the country come together and kind of decide what matters to their student and to them that year. And student financial aid and mental health was something that came up in conversation. And in collaboration with the Mental Health Commission of Canada, we decided to work on and research and write this paper to kind of reflect the reality of post-secondary students. The next one, please. Lobby meetings. So I'm pretty sure Christian and Abner has mentioned about Advocacy Week coming up in November for CASA. So over the summer, committees at CASA meet up with students across the country and they kind of develop policies and advocacy ask. And then in November, we meet with about 100 plus member of parliament, senators, ministers. We also meet with stakeholders such as University Canada, just to kind of bring those ask to them and kind of get them to hear from students themselves. I like to say I'm a staff member. I'm not able to do the job if students like yourself, Abner, Christian, is not around the table to advocate for yourself. So we present a lobby document to the government, and we say this is what students are looking for. This is the future of Canada is looking for. So here you can see a picture of Adam Brown, who's like one of the own from U of A, meeting the prime minister and kind of asking and representing your students on a national level to the prime minister. The next one, please. Parliamentary committees. I think this is another big thing that CASA kind of does, is we are able to bring students to present in committees and House of Commons on issues that impact post-secondary students. So rather than just hearing from someone else, you're hearing from the students itself. Christian has been kind of unfortunate with the pandemic to present online and has not been able to go in the House of Commons itself. But you can see like Adam has been able to present a couple times. Christian has had the chance to present to two committees so far last year, and hopefully this year we can see that there will be a couple more, hopefully. But parliamentary committees kind of allows that student voice to be at the forefront and be able to talk directly to politicians around the table about why this matters to students. Next one, please. One thing we wanted to highlight as well is we have a very unique partnership with the UEQ, the Union Etudiants de Québec, where we can say we actually represent students from coast to coast to coast, from the East Coast, from Quebec, from the West Coast. And through the unique partnership with Quebec, they do not have a voting right of, on our plenary, and so do we not. And the reason to why that is, like, we have a partnership and not necessarily a membership with them is because their schooling system over there is very different. For instance, they don't qualify for the Canada student loans, but they also give us access to Le Bloc as a party, where we are meeting with them for Advocacy Week. And CASA tries to meet with any parties regardless of which party they are at, because we believe that the student agenda should be pushed regardless or who is in power. And we really do leverage this partnership we have with the UEQ to meet with Le Bloc, and they are able to kind of like influence the decision making when it comes to improving post-secondary education. Next one, please. campaign. So another big thing is we want to hear from students and we want to engage students with the material that we kind of bring and all the policies. So what is the point of us working on all this when we are not able to hear from you and engage with you? So every year we try to have a campaign, usually in the winter semester, if it's not an election year. Usually we'll have the Get Out the Vote campaign that hopefully most of you have kind of seen. But the latest one we had was the Close the Gap campaign, which was kind of looking at financial aid assistance. That one was mostly online during the pandemic, where we asked students to kind of testify on how the pandemic has impacted their financial needs. And we kind of saw an investment in financial aid through the doubling of the student grants for that. And also we have the Student Let's Act, which was like the last in-person campaign we've had. And we saw some investment in terms of student mental health following that mental health campaign. Next one. So I'm just gonna go through the next slide, kind of highlighting our recent ones, but you should be able to find more on our website as well. But yeah, the next one. So I just highlighted four from like the last 2 years or so, but one big thing that kind of came out from our advocacy was the doubling of the student grant for 2021, 2022, and 2022, 2023 as a result of the pandemic. We heard from students that with the pandemic, you lost job, you were laid off from job and you needed the money. And CASA advocated to just double the student grant from 3,000 to 6,000. It was at first, it was just for 1 year. And then with the pandemic continuing, we asked for another year. And now I know the membership is kind of working towards advocating to let it remain permanent, because we heard from students that this is something that will benefit them. Another one, we saw an investment of $9 million in aid package for post-secondary students. So when the pandemic was announced and there was the SERP coming around, a lot of students said that they don't qualify for it because they are not eligible for this program. So CASA took it to advocate to government, and we saw the student relief package that came out of it. The pause on the freezing of the student loan interest for the couple of years during the pandemic came out of that package. We also saw a launch of the national standard for mental health and well-being that kind of came as a result of the campaign that was led a couple of years ago. And there was also a $925 million investment in Canadian research, which was the largest investment in Canadian history. Next one, please. So just to kind of like give you the context of what ABNA and Christian kind of do is when they tell you they go on conferences, we're just going to go for a brief overview of what a year at CASA would look like. So if you could go to the next one. So yeah, in June is the foundation, where it's just about brainstorming about the priorities that impact you impact the students, and Christian and Abner would be like the primary and secondary delegate speaking on the behalf of your students and kind of deciding those priorities. And then in July at foundation, they also elect the board for CASA, where Christian was elected after an hour of contentious debate of who wants to be elected and to take on this position. And then in July, they go on a board retreat and kind of work on the priorities that were decided by members and kind of develop an action plan from there. And then in August, there's a policy and strategy where the advocacy priorities are kind of voted on by membership. So it's where you have open consultation. Is this reflective of what your students are asking, what you're hearing from your campus? In September, I actually just came from the Indigenous Student Conference that happened in BC this year, where this committee is kind of like does their own thing on the side, just in the aims of like decolonizing our institution, but they kind of advise us on what policy and how to better advocate for them, but also giving them the space at a national level to bring their own voice to the table. In October, we'll have some committee work and prep work for Advocacy Week. In November, you'll have Christian and Abner meeting with politicians and ministers and senators on the Hill and bringing the UASU voice and the University of Alberta students' voice to parliamentarians, for instance, by like sharing personal story that they are hearing on their campus and bringing that to them. In January, there is the campaign execution on your own campus. And then in March, we kind of wrap up the year with our AG. Next one. So the next one, we kind of talk about the CASA priorities this year from what we've heard from members from coast to coast, but also from your own two delegates at CASA. The next one. So after much consultation and discussion, it was voted that these were like the top four priorities that students have seen as a matter of concern and CASA should be addressing. The first one is student financial aid. The second one is student mental health. And then there was sustainable and housing that was kind of pretty talked about a lot around the table. And also how do we work around decolonizing the institution? So as you saw, we kind of heard from students and we did more research about the student mental health through the release of the report. And student financial aid is something we are still working on. And we are currently in the process of approving our pre-budget submission to submit to the parliament and then to kind of advocate for more student financial aid as well. Next one. So now that I have kind of like talked about what we do, but in the end, what does it all mean for you as a member and why should you like kind of care of what CASA does? So the next one. So by having Abner and Christian sit on CASA, you're able to bring the University of Alberta students at a national level. You are very fortunate to have Christian as chair, where he's able to represent you in terms of meeting. Like very often when Christian would be sitting with meeting with stakeholders and politician as chair, he will always mention that he's the VP external of USU First and kind of bring the voice that he has on your campus to these meetings while also being the chair of a national advocacy. They are also able to attend CASA conferences where they're able to network with different student organizations across the country, but also have professional development workshops where they are building relationships around government relations, media training as well. The next one is participation in CASA committees and working groups. So the most work that we do, it comes from committees where students meet bi-weekly and they do the work on policies, advocacy, and kind of set the direction for the organization. By being a member of CASA, you have an advanced stakeholder relations. You all have internal issues that you have to kind of deal with. So by being a member of CASA and paying a fee, because of the size of your campus, you pay about $1.75 per student to CASA. And through that, you're able to kind of task the home office staff to kind of do their relationship building with government officials. And then you're able to more focus internally rather than trying to build these relationships on the Hill as well as maintaining internal issues. You'll have access to professional training and advocacy, and it's very member driven. As I like to say, I am just a staff. Without Christian and Abner and other student leaders around the table, I'm not able to do the job that I do, and whatever they tell me to do, I will do because it's your money, it's the member driven, and it's a value for money because of the size of UFA. You pay about $1.72 per student.
I apologize. That brings you to the end of your 15 minutes.
That was the end of the presentation. So perfect timing.
Awesome. Are you wanting to do a question and answer?
Yeah.
Okay. Levi, is that a motion to extend? Okay. And the motion to extend is for 10 minutes per standing orders. Is there a second to that? Joanie. Just going to give Courtney a moment to get back. Okay, and we'll move right into a vote on this one. If you are opposed to the motion to extend by 10 minutes, please make it known by a show of hands. We do not currently have the Zoom screen up. Is there anyone on Zoom in opposition? Okay, I do not see any, so that passes unanimously. So 10 minutes, please continue.
Perfect. I think that was perfect timing in terms of ending. So that's like kind of the wrap of the presentation, but I'm happy to take any questions from the floor.
So we'll manage the speakers list just because of hybrid. I did see Lionel pop his hand up pretty quick there. So Lionel, please just go ahead.
Okay, I'll make like a sort of a common question. So first, I'm very happy to see that CASA like explicitly mentions international students in its policy, which is good because unlike some other associations, you have to actually ask them to do it. And So indeed, international students should not be seen as piggy banks. Like, we're not like just bringing money here, right? And like being only like valued economically. So thank you very much for your work. I just have a simple a little question here. So I'm just curious about the what CASA plans to do to advocate for international students, like say on immigration pathways to get PR, to get citizenship, to for job opportunities, and like and also like to deal with the visa study permit processing delays that has been happening since the onset of COVID. It has been like this for like 2 years ish. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for the question, Lionel. So yeah, I'm glad that you could find the publication on our CASA's report on supports for international students. So in terms of what our priorities are for advocacy there, the first is that we're in our AVO document in November this month, later this month, we're going to ask the government to modify conditions for study permits so that it can allow international students to participate in co-op and internships that are integrated into their programs of studies without needing a separate work permit. And we've also been pushing to expand eligibility for off-campus employment so that international students who are studying full-time or part-time can get more hours without that limit that they have during the semester. As you can see from that document, there's obviously a suite of other policy recommendations. So oftentimes internally, I'll have meetings alongside McKenzie or executive director with folks from immigration and citizenship to talk about some of those other recommendations, whether it's in regards to how we can process study permits faster, which can be done again by eliminating the need for a work permit, because that can fast track the process. But anything else in regards to maybe supports for international students who are wanting to bring their family or spouse along with them to the country, because I believe that's a recommendation, but also recognizing the volunteer experience or other work experience that they got while studying here to be recognized as part of the Express Entry Points program.
I also wanted to highlight that it was just, I think, last week that a Christian and a couple of our international students met with the secretary, the parliament secretary to the minister of IOCC, and they were able to bring that international student voice directly to them, where we heard from students about the delay in visa, and we asked for a meeting with the minister, and we met with the parliamentary secretary to the minister, and they were able to hear directly from Christian and other international students about how that's affecting them. So I think being part of CASA kind of give you that leeway to have these direct meetings with them and kind of bring the student voice there.
Yeah, I was going to say that while we're in Ottawa, actually, Abner actually accidentally bumped into the Minister of Immigration without realizing it at the time. So, you know, that was our shot to also let him know about our priorities.
Okay, thank you. Haroon, please go ahead.
Yeah, so I was looking at the advocacy priorities. One that kind of stuck out to me was sustainability and housing, because housing is something that I'm quite interested in. I'm just wondering, so like, I know housing, once again, like a lot of what I'm guessing it's advocating for affordable housing for students. I'm just wondering why this would be on a national one instead of a municipal one, like the Edmonton Student Alliance. Because when it comes to, just because like I'm just trying to understand that, because when it comes to housing projects, right, a majority of them are funded by coalitions through the federal, provincial, and municipal governments. Mm-hmm. So I'm just wondering, is there any plan maybe to like work with student, because I know like student, I know how the Edmonton Student Alliance here, Edmonton housing rates, while a little bit more expensive, are semi-affordable, but compared to Vancouver, it's a lot more pricey. So I'm just wondering, like, how is CASA relating with municipal bodies?
Great question, actually. So how and why we identified sustainability in housing as an issue is that I think Edmonton, for sure, is one of the more lucky ones when it comes to housing in the country. But like you mentioned, Vancouver, but also the folks out in the east, a lot of our counterparts in Halifax and in Ontario have talked about that large unaffordability in housing and finding a place to stay. So recognizing the role that CASA can play is through those funding levers that the federal government has. Part of it is also that CASA can only also advocate on what is within its policy library. So that has to be approved and voted on by the membership. There's also a bit of a deficit there, recognizing that there's an opportunity to build research and research and create a document or policy positions that we can use to advocate to the government is what we're kind of doing now as a priority, that we want to get the data. We want to work, for example, the Canadian Federation of Municipalities, I think will be the best way to address your question of like how we can get that work done. Working with Edmonton Student Alliance is a bit less of a work because it's a long process between CASA and ESA, but also there would be a lot of municipal student AVO groups to work with. So it's just best to work with those that are already at the federal level doing the same work. So yeah, it's just about seeing how we can mechanize the funding levers at the federal level to get the units built that need that students need to, you know, be able to find a place to live.
Okay, thank you. I see Fateh wishes to be added to the speakers list. Chanpreet, please go ahead.
Sure. So a few years back when COVID kind of started, I do remember the federal government announced a relief package for the students. The international students were not included in that. And that time was the first time when I felt that CASA probably was not the right choice to kind of be along with. The reason being that CASA was so busy in celebrating the package that they got that they completely forgot that international students are not included. Where on contrary, the Canadian Federation of CFES were one who were very vocal to immediately point out that this is not something that's the best. It's fine that we got it, but then this is not exactly that serve all the students and everything. Now, with that incident being in mind and kind of showing a little bit of neglect from the CASA's side, I just wanted to bring it to the members' information. But my main question is about active committees within the CASA. So I do see that there are, you know, graduate advisory groups, there are college and polytechnic advisory groups, national indigenous advisory group, committee and all, but I don't see any committee for international students specific where the policy and the advocacy priorities could come from the international specific side. So I do see there's a generality, but I think there's more that CASA can do by setting up a committee for the international students to discuss that, because all your members share a huge chunk of membership who are international students. So this was the idea we proposed 2 to 3 years back, and it even went all the way to CASA when Adam Brown was the CASA's chair, but there was not a lot of movement that happened, and even until now, there's not a lot of movement. So I just wanted to ask from CASA on how you folks could work on setting up this committee so it could really help in having a strong voice within the organization in a long run rather than on a need-on basis.
I can kind of take that on as well and feel free to add off the question. But I think you point a good point in terms of like when CASA was celebrating the win of that. But we heard from international students, and there was like other ways we were like advocating for international students in terms of the working hours, increasing the working hours, and like breaking the barriers in terms of the procedure for their work permit and co-op as well. But going back to your committee as well, we currently have passionate student leaders on our EDI committee that bring the student, the international student voice. I know there's the discussion currently about creating a subcommittee for international students. So definitely the conversation is happening there. And also, like, I think the reason to why there has not been a committee so far for international students is we kind of want to bring international students together, like as we're creating a policy on financial aid, is like how do we integrate international students there rather than segregating them and saying that you are different, you need to be there, but like how do we incorporate them in all our policies and make sure that they are not left in the crack with already existing policies. But definitely international students are not left behind. I think coming myself from an international student background and I'm doing this job, I think like that's something I kind of hold close to as well. And we are fortunate to have passionate student leaders that are international students who are voting members on our EDI committee and make sure that the international student voice is kind of brought to the table. So definitely work to be there, to be done there. But I feel like, yeah, I just wanted to reassure you that it's not that we forgot about international students, but they are being discussed around the table.
No, I wouldn't. There's nothing much to add to that. I mean, the only thing I can emphasize is, like Wasim has said, a lot of our counterparts are also international students. So they sit on our policy committee. There's 3 international students on our board of directors, I believe. They're in many of our other committees. So that perspective is always there surrounding the conversation. It's especially why it was a priority on our AVA document last year, and it's a priority on AVA document this year. So definitely it's not a group that's forgotten. And I think it's, like you say, it's important to recognize opportunities to grow, but also it's still very good to also celebrate the wins that you get, recognizing that to push change within government at any level takes time and it takes research and work to get that done, right? So celebrating the work that
okay, got us there is great. Thank you. That brings us to the end of the 10 minutes. A motion to extend for a further 10 minutes would be in order, but I just remind council that we have 2 more presentations to get through that are also likely to extend. That being said, is there a motion to extend from the floor?
Okay, seeing none, please join me in thanking CASA for presenting today. Thank you so much. Okay, and with that, we will move to our next item of business, which is Levi and Daniela's motion to present on Bill 1, Simplifying and Clarifying Governance Documents. Before we proceed, is there any opposition to this presentation? Okay, seeing none, that presentation is accepted. Is there a slide deck for this presentation? Okay, would you like us to pull it up for you? Yeah. Will you just stay there or do you wanna? Okay, please take it away.
Thank you, Council, and thank you, Daniela, for seconding this for me. Now, Bill 1 will be coming for second reading at the next Council meeting. I was hoping to get it for today, but I realized too late that Friday was a holiday, and the publishing deadline for today's meeting was Thursday at 8. We had our last meeting Thursday evening, so we were a little too late. I didn't want to put it on in the late editions and have to special order it. So in the interim, just a quick presentation on kind of where we're at, how we got to where we are, hopefully any iron out any questions and that we can fiddle into the end product at our next meeting and then bring that for approval 2 weeks from now. Next slide. But first, I do want to thank a few people because who was involved in this. So the bylaw committee, Jaden Brooks, Simran Dillon, Daniela Carvajal-Velez, David Lee, Andrew Montero, and Adrian Wanamaniak. This project ended up being a lot more enormous than I was expecting to when we undertook it. And I definitely could not have done it without all of these hardworking individuals. So my utmost gratitude to all of them. Also General Manager Mark DuMichel for bringing this to our attention along with Abner in the first place. And then our governance staff, Courtney Graham and Jeff Giordano for helping me keep track of all of this. Next slide. So when did this start and when will this be finished? Started back on June 14th when Abner and Mark approached me to pitch this idea to kind of come along with the GRTF recommendations. A week later, brought it to bylaw, who liked the proposal, delegated work, got to work, brought first principles August 9th, and hopefully 2 weeks from now, we'll have second reading. Next slide. Why did we need this to begin with? Well, like Mark and Abner had pitched to me, our bylaws are convoluted, hard to read, and not very accessible. So one of the tasks to do this was to make them more accessible and easier to read. There's currently 22 bylaws, of which 347 sections. Bylaw 100, the one that deals with Students' Council and its various committees, comes out to about 52 sections or about 15% of the total. The top five largest, Students' Council, Die Board, and most of the elections bylaws, sum up to approximately 60, so over half in just those five alone. That makes a case for splitting up the larger bylaws for easier reading and combining the smaller related bylaws to reduce or eliminate discrepancies. In addition, many sections, some are excruciatingly lengthy, such as Bylaw 100 Section 17 is over 1600 words. This also leads to a potential for duplicate information, sometimes the same but could be different. Bylaw 100 defines a Students' Union member as any undergraduate student who is registered in a faculty and has paid their Students' Union fees. But both bylaw 2200 and 2300 define a member as anyone who is an undergraduate student currently enrolled in at least one course for credit at the University of Alberta. That may or may not be the same. There might be some students who are on work placement or practicum or whatever the case may be, and that is technically a course for credit, but for whatever reason, they're not paying any of those additional mandatory non-instructional fees. Things like mandates and quorums of standing committees appear in both bylaw and standing orders when it really should only be just one or the other, because we've had instances where something is changed when they are housed in two different places. It's changed in one and not the other, and then it leads to issues down the road. Next slide. Number two, provide more or easier ways to update procedural content while maintaining council oversight. Our bylaws can be too rigid and inflexible, such as 8200.11, where it states that audit committee retains the authority to recommend to students council that a collection of student representative association fees cease at the beginning of the next academic year. If the association fails to report as outlined in sections 5.1 and 5.2, or audit committee is not satisfied that the submitted reports meet the requirements of bylaw. Now, SRAs may not always have the best transition, turnover, or training. Documents may get lost in the shuffle. Previous execs don't communicate to the new exec the importance of reporting deadlines. Then the new exec misses the deadline or doesn't provide the information. And then audit recommends ceasing fee collection. We don't want to deprive student representative associations some of the fees that they need to keep going. So we should have some mechanisms to give them a pass if they provide a substantive reason for it. We also wanted to separate the principles or the what and the why from the procedures. Some sections of bylaw really get into the weeds when the level of detail that is could be better placed elsewhere, such as bylaw 100, which delves into very specific population brackets that coincides with the number of seats a faculty gets. And that also touches upon our council size debate or discussion we had at CAC earlier today. Next slide. So what did we do? Now, before the changes, you had the Alberta Post-Secondary Learning Act, specifically sections 93 and 95, which establishes a students association at each public post-secondary institution in Alberta and permits said association to make bylaws governing its affairs. Then you have those bylaws in question, the list we went over. The bylaws, which currently can only be adopted, amended, or rescinded by two simple majority votes or readings of students' council occurring not less than 7 days apart. This makes them cumbersome to change in instances that warrant it, and they can't be suspended in the same way our standing orders are. After the changes, we will have the PSLA and our bylaws, which will dictate the principles of the legislation, but we've also added a subservient tier below those called regulations. And those regulations will focus more on the procedures or the specifics of certain topics. Under those, we have appendices, which are more for information only, such as definitions relied upon by the bylaws and regulations, lists of student representative associations, lists of fees that we collect, et cetera, et cetera. Next slide. We started by reorganizing all of our bylaws into four overarching categories: governance, operations, election, and finances. The first of which, governance, is shown here. Whereas previously bylaw 100 dealt with a plethora of council related topics, such as its composition, its mandates, its quorum of its standing committees, what the speaker does, we've now pulled all of those specifics and put them into their own regulations. Council will each get its own, which retains topics such as its composition, its eligibility, and attendance regulations, while pulling out everything specific to the committees and sorting them accordingly. Instead of having one massive section for all of the committee membership and one massive section for committee mandates, each committee will have its own section that pertains solely to it. And in doing so, we'll also be consolidating committee standing orders into a single unified set that all committees will use for simplicity. This came through one of our first meetings of the Committee of Chairs. Next slide. Whereas section one on governance covered more of the overarching governance related topics such as council or its committees, section two on operations will house all of the day-to-day regulations such as the confidentiality, bilingualism, and emergency measures regulations. Next slide. Section three will pertain solely to our elections and everything to do with them, from the chief returning officer and their elections office staff to our executive and board and governor's elections, or the council and general faculty's council elections, or the plebiscites and referenda. Next slide. And finally, the section on finances will pertain to everything to do with budget and fees, how the budget is created, all the various fees we collect, what the fees are for, and who we collect those fees on behalf of if we are passing them along, such as the case of the dedicated fee unit or a faculty association membership fee. We do have a couple of DFUs and FAMPs that are going up for renewal. We talked about that in the Fab Chairs meeting today over lunch at Dewey's, which were really good. Everybody should go. Next slide. Now, where do we go from here? After Bill 1 passes second reading and all of our bylaws get reorganized into the proposed structure shown today, our bylaw and regulation review will begin, which is what we started upon at our bylaw meeting on Thursday evening. The review will be conducted similar to how Council Admin Committee has begun our 2022-23 standing order reviews. All of our bylaws and regulations will be added into a folder that will have access to where people can comment or suggest changes they'd like bylaw committee to consider. They will be open till about a month prior to when we want these changes enacted. That will give the committee sufficient time to discuss and debate all of the changes and consult any relevant parties if need be. I will say again that all bylaws and all regulations are being looked at this year. In years past, I found that each member of bylaw committee takes one or two bylaws they have a particular interest in to look at while the rest languish untouched. In some cases, those committee members, for whatever reason, don't complete the review they volunteered for. Maybe they got busy with school. Maybe they resigned from the committee. But by having all of them looked at by all of the bylaw committee members and even any members of council who are non-voting members, crowdsourcing the review to all of council who might be interested in pitching in instead of just the seven committee members will ensure that more eyes are looking over everything and nothing gets missed this year. Section 3 on elections needs to be completed first, ideally by having first principles come to council on November 29th and second reading on December 13th. This is to have any election changes go into effect early enough to give the chief returning officer and election staff time to review and amend the nominations package prior to the publishing deadline, so we don't have a repeat of the CRO making changes to the nomination package in the middle of the candidates meeting. The regulation pertaining to students' council will also be reviewed approximately the same time. Since the Dub Board recommended we reconcile council eligibility and candidate eligibility, so it makes sense to work on them together. The rest of Section 1 can wait until later. We'll likely need input from the Committee of Chairs and the various committees. Section 4 on finances will be reviewed after that. It should be completed prior to the elections, as we do have a couple of DFUs up for renewal plebiscites this year, as well as a renewal referendum as a result of last year's failed plebiscite. And there's several faculty association membership fees that are up for renewal this year as well. Section 2 on operations is a lower priority than the rest and can most likely wait until towards the end of the year. I believe that's the last one. Yeah. So if you have any questions, how much time do I have left?
You have 3 minutes, 40 seconds.
Okay. So I've got 3 minutes and 40 seconds of questions now, or you can also ask during question period as well.
Okay. Wonderful. I see Haroon was quick on the draw. So please go ahead.
Yeah. I'm really excited by this for us to look at our bylaws. I think it's really crucially important. My only concern, though, as what's called as a member of this body, is that I'm concerned that there may be a perceived conflict of interest with the bylaw chair reviewing the election bylaws, considering his considering comments that he made in H07 and in an appeal that he made, which is attached at the bottom of the order papers. And I'm not confident that, especially considering that we are dealing with elections. So I just wanted to ask the member if he will recuse himself from that section of dealing with the bylaw handed off to another member of bylaw committee.
I was going to say that myself and Abner got assigned the section 3 on elections. So that'll be us handling it.
I think that answers that question for now. If there are additional concerns, I'd probably recommend they be brought to committee. Lionel, please go ahead.
Just a quick comment. So yeah, so it's like, thank you for all your work. So I think it's very important to make documents easier to read and to navigate and to avoid archaic and confusing terminologies for us and for anyone that's coming after us. So thank you for your job.
Chan Preet, please go ahead.
Sure. I just wanted to talk about how the council members who are not on the bylaw committee could engage in this process in a meaningful manner. Because in the past, what we have seen is that the first principles are normally just kind of first principles. They don't say the direction or the wording that we're going to change. And when the second principles come, they directly come to the council and then they're up for vote. And then for such a large change, especially where we are relaying out all the bylaws, we don't want to land into a situation where inside the council, we're having multiple amendments to amend the things as the people on the final day kind of want. So I just wanted to ask the bylaw committee chair if it would be possible, before introducing the second principles to the council, share them with all the members of the council and probably have a Google form. So they could provide the bylaw committee some input that they wish to provide, and the bylaw committee could consider that input and then bring the second principles to the council. Just because of the scale of the changes, I'm suggesting this, that we avoid the final day getting kind of a bit too messier. Would that be possible?
Please go ahead, Levi.
It's not a bad idea, but currently all members of council are non-voting members of bylaw committee. If there's any interest in providing feedback, or if you wanted to come in and talk about it, anybody's more than welcome to come to our meetings. They're every Thursday from 5 to 6, or every other Thursday from 5 to 6. Any big changes are also going to be coming on the order papers that comes out Friday afternoon. That gives you a full 3 days to look over any changes. So that's, if people aren't reading the order papers and coming up with questions, or if it's not adhering to the first principles, they can vote it down or send it back to committee.
Okay, thank you. And that brings us to the end of the 15 minutes. There is one person left on the speakers list. Is there any desire to extend? Leo. Hey, that works. Seeing no interest to extend, we will move to the next presentation. Thank you, Levi and Bylaw Committee, for all your hard work. Okay, and next up is the motion to allow Juan Vargas to present on the climate emergency units. Before we proceed, is there any opposition to this presentation? Okay, seeing none, the presentation is accepted. Are you wanting to come up here?
Yeah.
Okay. Christian, are you wanting to introduce?
Yes, sure. Hello, everyone. So I'm very excited to welcome back Juan Vargas Alba back to council. Many of you may or may not know, but Juan was once upon a time a counselor for, was it arts faculty? There you go. And yeah, now he's back in his capacity as a employee for the Climate Emergency Corps, Climate Emergency Unit. And yeah, he was going to talk about kind of what exciting projects there are out there for us to be able to get engaged with climate action, recognizing that we do have some policies that we passed last year that were pretty monumental for the SU in terms of our step forward with dealing with the climate emergency right now. So I'll pass it over to Juan.
Hey, you have 15 minutes. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Christian. Yeah, it's been 3 years since I've sat in these seats, so it's kind of fun to be back. I do feel a little bit old, but that's fine. We'll make it work. I want to start with a shout out to Councillor Soto. I've known Gabriela since we were like six, like we like knew each other all the way from Quebec. So sad that she's not here, but she's on the stream. So hello, nice to talk to you again. Like Christian said, my name is Juan. I was a counselor for the arts in 2019-2020. When I was a counselor, a lot of things happened. But one of the really big changes that was really central to that year was an overall change in the way in which council was speaking on climate. It wasn't just that people were starting to realize a little bit more about just how vital and here the climate emergency was. It was also that we all had a really clear role in fighting against it. And like many of you and like many of your constituents, I wasn't born here. I was born in Colombia. And in 2019, I had the opportunity to go back home during the winter. And in a part of my hometown that I'm from that is kind of higher in the mountains and where I never really had to suffer much from the heat, I got a huge sunburn. I think moments like that really made clear to me in those moments that the climate emergency was here, that the way in which we were feeling and addressing and experiencing the world was changing faster than we realized, and that climate wasn't a problem for 10 years from now. It wasn't a problem for 15 years from now. It was a problem for now. And so that experience, along with the release of the the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, and a lot of other research really came out telling us that this was the moment that we were facing in this moment. And so as a council, we tried to act. There was a few things that we did. And I would say that I would love to talk about what we did wrong, what we did right. I think with the benefit of hindsight, there was a lot that we did wrong, and there was a lot of that we did right. In fall of that year, we saw 10,000 students, 10,000 people mobilize in support of climate action through a climate strike. And less than a month later, we saw 15,000 people across Edmonton do the same. It was clear that the message wasn't just here, it was everywhere, that climate change was worsening and that we had to do something about it. And at the same time, that messaging was not being reflected in almost any of our elected bodies. The message is barely heard now as we're gearing up to fall into an election. One of the other things that we learned is that we were going to have to work a lot harder to make the issue of climate change one that students could see themselves fighting for. And while we had conversations about the merits and need for divestment, it was a little bit harder for students to see themselves as part of that fight. So fast forward to today, and even though we've had some incredible victories at the SU level and at, you know, the federal level, and not really at the provincial level, we're not really moving. We're not really getting the emergency. We're not really acting in the way that we need, right? And at the same time, we can talk about a dozen other crises. Alberta is facing a crisis of brain drain, where a third of undergrad students are thinking of leaving the province after their undergrad. Alberta is facing a crisis of long-term unemployment, where even if you can get a job, it's likely not going to be all that great. And you're probably going to be terrified the whole time, because more and more young people are terrified of what their futures look like in a world with climate change. They want to do something about it. They want meaningful work. I went to my younger brother's high school graduation back in May. And the difference between that graduation and my graduation from high school in 2015 was stark. It was young people who, to me, looked clueless. It was young people who, more and more, like their peers, don't know what they're doing with their future, because they don't know what that future looks like, because they don't know if it's a livable future. And I know that likely a lot of you connect with this. Likely a lot of you have people back home in places that are, at this moment, underwater or under stress of high heat. And we know that that's not just in the global south, that's here too. Last year, Alberta lost 40 people to a deadly heat wave, and that's just the first of many. So where are we now? We're in a place where people care about climate change, where people also see the way in which it's intersecting with the many other issues that you and your constituents face, but people don't actually see an entirely clear path forward. They don't really know what to be a part of or how to deal with it, frankly. When I was a counselor, we tried many, many things. Some worked out, some didn't. And we also learned that to really fight these issues head on, we had to give people a genuine invitation to be part of something bigger and to be part of something that felt like it was winnable. That really brings us to this moment, really thinking about how do we bring all these things together? What sort of solutions can we fight towards, and what sort of solutions can we really win? I'm not really going to talk about the climate emergency unit. I'm going to talk about what we're going to do. What we're going to do is we're going to mobilize thousands of young people, thousands of people across this province in the next 7 months ahead of the election to demand a bold investment into the types of jobs that we deserve. We're calling it a climate core. A climate core would be a massive government program giving young people and people above 35 the opportunity to be in a 1 to 2 term jobs program, whether it be in retrofits, whether it be in energy infrastructure, whether it be in land reclamation, whether it be in the type of community care that we need to be seeing right now. For example, the people who need to be checking on their elderly neighbors during heat waves, or the type of, for example, nursing work that is really vital to helping keep people alive. Because we're not just trying to mitigate the climate crisis, we're trying to adapt to it as we live through it. So the campaign that I'm coming to you with is the Alberta Campaign for a Climate Core. It's the opportunity to connect with your constituents and with people across campus and other campuses across the province to ensure that we're actually demanding a solution that works for young people and that creates the type of future that we can actually live in. So a few more ideas on this Climate Core aspect. When we imagine the Climate Core, the vision isn't just for green jobs. The vision is for an actual invitation to serve and to contribute to something much bigger that will ensure we're fighting the climate crisis head on. It's an issue of equity, talking about the ways in which people of color, women, international students are being brought into trades work, are being brought into the future of work on this land, but also across the country. We're looking at an opportunity to give people room and board and a community to be a part of, to actually work on the type of work that is necessary for the future. And if this all sounds great and you wish you could enroll right now, I wish I could too, but it doesn't exist yet. So what we're doing is we're going to be campaigning over the next 7 months ahead of the Alberta election, like I said, to bring in thousands of people across the province to be part of a campaign for something much bigger. Because even though we know that these are the issues that people are facing and these are the issues that people talk about, no political party is speaking to these issues in this moment. So in this moment, we're talking about building power, we're talking about building allies. And honestly, one of the things that I really learned when I was in your seats 3 years ago is that we really needed to learn how to mobilize students. And so here is an opportunity, not just to mobilize students for climate and for the future of their work, but it's also an opportunity for you to learn how to mobilize students when the next increase to your to rent on Lister comes, or the next time that the tuition fees for international students get hiked, right? It's not just about the future of our work, the future of our planet. It's also about the future of the communities on campus. Because when people don't see a future that they can actually live in, they leave the province. We get lower enrollment rates. We get higher dropout rates. That's not the future we want. And here's an opportunity for us to work together on a much different future than the one we're currently getting. So that's my pitch for you for the Climate Core. But I also want to tell you where I think you can come in, at least in this moment, right? I'm not asking you to vote on a Climate Core. It's already supported in the policy. And I know that because I wrote it. That's supposed to be funny. What I am asking you to do is connect me to the people in your communities, in your constituencies, who you know want to be leaders on climate change. I know you want to be leaders and you are leaders, maybe not on climate, but certainly on a lot of issues around your campus. And I want to work with you together to, was compared to a Paris scheme earlier, but to build the pyramids that we need to get the mass scale that we need on this campus and across the province, to really make clear that students want a climate core. Students want a government that will actually invest in their futures, and students want a government that will invest in the future of their work. So I do have some handouts. I can pass them out later. But at the end of the day, my pitch to you is this movement is coming. I want you to be a part of it. You have the connections to the people on the campus that can help activate it, and you are the leaders that we need. And so when we're really talking about what the future of this province looks like, it's one where we have meaningful, sustainable, and genuine work, and it's a future that we can actually envision being a part of. So thank you all so much. I would love to talk to you more about this.
Thank you for the presentation. Are there members wishing to ask questions? I see Haroon, you can start us off, and then also Chan Preet, Daniela, and Ibuku.
Point of information, Mr. Speaker.
Yep.
Okay. Is there a way for the notes to reflect that I recused myself from this discussion? I work in a company at that. Its mandate don't allow me to engage in anything relating to oil and gas because it's AER.
Sure. I think we can record that in the records, just that.
But I do want to let the presenter know that it's a policy thing and don't reflect my personal standing on this matter though.
Yeah, so I think we can just indicate that Chan Preet has a potential conflict of interest and is recusing himself from like discussion.
From the whole thing, I just want it to be reflected in the meeting minutes. That's it. So I'll just not ask any question.
Okay. We can talk about specifics later. I think that is possible, though. Thank you. Haroon, please go ahead.
Yeah. A climate corp is an exciting idea that I fully support. And yeah, I just want to say thank you so much, Juan, for coming and for sharing this. Like, it's something that's absolutely important, especially I remember when I was running for student union president, that talking with engineers in ETLC or DICE, talking to them about their future and them being not confident that they can find jobs, whether it be talking to students in humanities centers, other parts of this campus, a lot of students are worried about finding jobs. So a climate corp is a bold initiative that will hopefully get this province back on track, keeping students here, investing in this province. So I'm really excited to see this. And yeah, thank you so much.
Okay, thank you. I see Leo wishes to be added. Chanpreet, I assume you had just raised your hand before too. Okay, cool. Daniela, please go ahead.
Thank you. I just had a question, I guess more about, I was looking at the website, but I want to hear more from you about like your approach, or I guess just like as a whole unit, your approach to how you're, I guess, addressing this, just because like Western, or I guess colonial sustainability has tried to do what like Indigenous people have understood for thousands of years. And that's why a lot of efforts have failed, like to today in the Western world, to, I guess, address these sustainability and climate change issues. So I'm just wondering, like, are you, like, what's the level of involvement that you have from Indigenous peoples? And like, are you approaching it more from like their perspective or more of like a Western perspective?
Yeah, thank you for your question, Councillor Carvajal. So the Climate Emergency Unit itself is who I work for. The framework that we bring is really looking at when we talk to people about the need to mobilize for the climate emergency, people will often say, hey, we've never done something like this before. And our response is, yeah, yes, we have, right? We did so during the war, and here are the markers of emergency of what it looks like to treat the climate emergency like the emergency that it is. That's one thing. On the climate corps specifically, that's actually one of my favorite things. I agree, right? Like, the climate crisis is a crisis of colonialism. We wouldn't be here without colonialism, right? Like, we would be at a very different place where we're talking about using resources in a very different way, or we even discuss resources differently. And so what the climate corps is an opportunity to do, it isn't just to say, hey, we're going to give you jobs to do like reclamation. It's also saying, here is a central role for traditional ecological knowledge in the way in which we're doing that work, and saying, here is an opportunity to boost Indigenous leadership, because that's central to fighting climate change, right? So not just working with nations who are doing community-based monitoring, it's also an opportunity to talk about, for example, like what are the practices of conservation that we're undergoing. So I've had like the great opportunity to like work with the Department of Resource Economics and Environmental Sociology here at the University of Alberta, people who are working with nations across the province, across the country, to work on things like protection of caribou, like restoration of traditional like grasslands in the prairies, right? Sorry, I'm rambling because I get really excited about this. There is no way out of this without like centering Indigenous leadership. And so, no, it's not about Western conservation to me. It is actually genuinely about finding, like looking to Indigenous leadership and how we are pushing for conservation and the future of climate and the future of our relationship with the land, because that's where the answer lies. Thanks for your question.
Okay, thank you. And that actually perfectly brings us to the end of the 15 minutes. Is there any desire to extend? Leo, is that a motion to extend? Okay, are there any seconders to that motion? There are 5 members. Any motion to or seconds? Ibuku seconds. Okay. We'll move straight into a vote. This requires a 2/3 majority to pass. If you are opposed to the motion to extend the presentation by 10 minutes, please make it known by a show of hands. Okay, that appears to pass unanimously. Thank you. And the next person is Ibuku. Please go ahead.
Thank you for being here, and thank you for your passion. It's clear that you care about what you're talking about. To speak to your point about student groups, I think recently. There's a student group for students and like who care about climate change or are kind of exhausted. So maybe that's a good connection for you. But you spoke a lot about mutual aid and community-based supports, especially for geriatric people, and also the disproportionate impact on POC marginalized groups. Could you kind of talk a bit more about the direction you see that going in?
Yeah. So the work that I do is organizing, right? Like I am connecting with communities who see the problem and who want to be part of the solution. And so even though there is like a great value to advocacy and lobbying and meeting with the people who are making these decisions, I'm interested primarily in like showing people that they have power, right? Like showing everyday people that they have power to make a difference on this. And so for me, it's getting to a point where I'm able to connect, for example, with a nursing association, or for example, like, yeah, like with an engineering student association, whatever it might be, and working with them to work together. Like for me, the answer is collective action, right? We're not going to get to where we need to be on climate in Alberta without like clearly showing that there are thousands of people who want to be part of the solution. And even though voting and lobbying is central to these things, we've been trying to do that for the last 400 years, right? And it hasn't worked. And so what this moment calls for is we need to get people who are talking to the institutions that they're a part of, who are talking to their neighbors, who are building their relationships around this and saying like, we're gonna make a lot of noise until you give us what we want. I think I'm ranting, but I don't know if I answered your question. So that's really a lot of the work that I'm trying to do, like through you or through other groups. So I am connecting with a few other groups on campus to talk about tactics that could work to get people involved. Like a mass strike is cool, but it's only one of many things that we can do. And like, even though we got 15,000 people out in September of 2019, like we're nowhere near that at this point. And so we built that. And we built to that by building relationships and having serious conversations about something like a climate court, right? Like one clarification, and maybe it wasn't good when I did mention it, just so in case anyone was wondering, is like when I talk about climate court, the idea is a government says we are going to create this institution called the climate court, call it whatever else, as long as it does the same thing. And that institution is the one creating those jobs, giving people those jobs. And so the point where I'm at now, and part of the reason for why I'm coming to council now, is the campaign itself hasn't yet launched publicly, but a lot of the work that I'm hoping to do at this moment is to really build a significant base of support that I can then tap into when the campaign does launch, right? So the campaign launches with momentum and continues to build that momentum and shows people that there's always something more to do, always another action, always another reaction to hope for until we win. Thanks.
Thank you. Leo, please go ahead.
Thank you. And thank you, Juan, for being here. So I'm sure you know that the oil industry is a lifeline in this province. And many climate action organizations have promoted the phasing out of oil. And I know you have mentioned about less opportunities in this province and because of the climate crisis. However, considering that that after all, the oil industry is also a lifeline here. Phasing out oil is also is also a way to limit the opportunities of certain students within campus. So I just wanted to ask, will the Climate Corps promote the phasing out of oil in Alberta?
Thank you, Councillor Wong. Sure. Like I can be brutally honest with you, I think Alberta needs to rapidly phase out of oil and gas. I think that's going to happen whether we want it or not, right? Every trend in the world shows that the future of energy is not oil and gas. And what we do when we say to our students, we're only going to support this initiative if it doesn't push for that, we're telling our students that we're not actually investing in the future of their work. And to make it a little bit more visceral, like to be frankly honest with you, like I thank oil and gas for where I'm not, right? Like my family came to Alberta because my dad works in the field. And my dad, like many of your parents, like many of your loved ones, was laid off in 2015 when the prices crashed. And he wasn't rehired, because what's happening with the industry is that people get fired, the industry automates their work, and then surprise, surprise, their jobs aren't around. But the industry makes record profits, right? So when we're being told that the jobs don't exist, but the profit is still there, clearly the industry is preparing to phase out oil much faster than its workers are. And so when I think about the work that a Climate Corps is doing, it's in part filling that gap, right? Because I care about the future of every single worker in this province. And I think that even though you're correct, the industry has been a lifeline for those workers in the last 50, 60 years, that's not going to last forever, right? And I think everyone here knows that. And I think we deserve to tell our students that we're fighting for something better. Thanks.
Thank you. Levi, please go ahead.
Hey, Juan, thanks for coming. Long time no see. So there's a lot of nomenclature and terminology in here that I'm completely unfamiliar with. I'm trying to wrap my head around the Climate Emergency Unit, how it was done under the David Suzuki Institute, which is trying to form these climate corps around Canada. It also appears that there is several climate corps, at least in the States,
yes.
Which is housed under the Strategic Energy Innovations. Is there any kind of partnership with them? Are we duplicating efforts and trying to reinvent the wheel? How big of an organization is it? And then in skimming over the Climate Emergency Unit site, there's some references and shout outs to other incredible organizations such as Extinction Rebellion. So I just want to make sure that we're not going to be asked to sit on a bridge and block traffic.
No, Levi, I'm not going to ask you to sit on a bridge and block traffic. Like nonprofits oftentimes are funded by other nonprofits. Technically my job is nonpartisan. I'm funded by the Small Change Fund. It's a whole ecosystem. We're not duplicating efforts. There are several climate corps in the United States, many of which have been present for 20 plus years. But the consistent challenge that they find is that the funding isn't enough. The programs can't be large enough. Though those programs don't exist in Canada, our closest things are programs like Katimovic, which is a 4-month program with a very limited term and a very limited amount of positions for people. People, for example, will sometimes talk about hey, what if we just expand the SKIP program or the STEP program? And the issues that I find there is that, again, terms are too short, positions aren't large enough. And so instead of trying to expand something that maybe will be hard to expand, let's create the appropriate government program that'll do it, right? So if any of you are familiar with the Sunrise Movement in the United States, they were the ones that really, really helped bring forward this idea of the Green New Deal in the United States. Their last big victory was pushing for a civilian climate corps in the United States. It's a little bit of what we're basing ours on, but we're better because you're all here and you're all part of it. It's very similar. They did have some victories with this government in the States, where the government was like, yeah, let's commit some billions to it. And so everyone needs to be able to do their part and no one should be left behind. And so the invite is saying, if you want to be a part of it, then let's make you a part of it. That's the vision we have for Alberta. And listen, if someone is so dedicated, if 1,000 people are so dedicated to it that they do think they should block a bridge, we'll cross that bridge when we get there. But this is the moment. This is what this moment calls for. It's mass action and it's genuinely having conversations about what the future looks like. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. We have 10 seconds remaining, so I'm going to say we move on unless there is another motion to extend.
Very cool.
We are at the halfway point of our meeting.
Did you have something in 5 seconds? Yes. I have a sign-up sheet. If you're interested, I'll pass around. And I'm also going to pass around like a policy brief with what I just talked about, but maybe a little bit more. What's the word? Not as messy.
Okay. Thank you. So are there any such motions? Okay, seeing none, we will move to our next item of business. Juan, thank you very much. Okay, and like I said, Council, we are at our halfway point, so I'm going to move us into recess for 15 minutes. We will be back at 7:50 p.m. Thank you. Sorry, Courtney is just reminding me, I once again forgot attendance before the recess, so I'm just going to do that really quick. Sorry to tease you all. Abner?
Present.
Yeah. Gerleen?
Present.
Christian? Okay. Julia? Joni? Alex? Letitia? Abdul?
Here.
Haroon? Rebecca? Okay. Leo?
Here.
Joshin?
Here.
Milan? Oh, my bad. Milan resigned. Fate?
Here.
Levi?
EC.
Peen?
Here.
Jaden?
Here.
Paulina?
Here.
Janpreet? Medina?
Here.
Please keep the chatting to a minimum. We need to hear people's responses. Adrian?
Here.
Lionel?
Presente.
Colton? Ibuku?
Hello.
Gabriella?
Here.
Daniela? Charvi? Simran? Mobashir? David?
Present.
Rana? Vedant? And I am present and Mark is present. Okay, we will be back, let's say 7:52. Thank you, everyone. is the executive committee reports. I believe I wrote down the order. So, Joanie, may we please have your report?
Okay. So last week we had our second annual residential school memorial. So I want to thank everyone who did help in coming and planting the flags. And I just hope that everyone did take time and is still taking time to reflect where they're at in their like learning journey when it comes to reconciliation and supporting our Indigenous communities. Also, you can find like great resources in Julia's report. She was able to outline different things that you can do. So that's awesome. The next thing is myself and Julia are going to be mentors this year for the Strides Campaign Schools. So we've been listed with our mentees. So we're going to be starting doing that. So super excited about that. In regards to more work and advocacy that I've been doing, I've been starting up a few different committee meetings where we're talking and focusing on supporting students in precarious situations. So we're talking about mental health, food security, students with short-term needs in regards to housing situations. And myself and Christian are going to be sitting on those committees and seeing how we can best and adequately support those students who do need either short-term or long-term assistance. And another project that I actually did also campaign on is making sure we can support students who parent. So we currently have a working group who has outlined a project and different deliverables that we can address in regards to helping these students. And something that I'm hoping to push for is specific accommodation policies that can outline how we can better support them, specifically when we're talking about physical spaces, programming, services, and resources for students who parent, as well as students with dependents. And the last thing here is I've also just been able to meet with some students, whether that be in person or virtually, and this has helped me kind of figure out how to guide and shape some of the advocacy that I'm doing. And I'd love to encourage anyone here, if you ever hear from students, please, if it falls within my portfolio, don't hesitate to talk to me. These are conversations and stories that I can use when I'm doing ADVO meetings and kind of like, you know, making sure that we can use that to shape how we're speaking to the university. Thank you.
Thank you. Julia, may we please have your report?
Yes, hello, Council. I just want to sort of second everything as Joanie has said. Thank everybody who came to the residential school memorial last Monday. I know it meant a lot to me, Joanie, and the rest of ISU to have as many people as we had there. Also, everyone helped clean up. Instead of taking 4 hours, it took us half an hour yesterday. So thank you so much to everyone who came. Like Joanie mentioned, my report focused more on ways that you can work towards truth and reconciliation because of the 30th being a holiday. So I hope you get a chance to like look over that if you could. Other than that, I'll actually give updates of what I've been working on. So we have the EDI steering committee that is sort of the internal committee within the SU to focus on ways that we can improve our EDI practices within the organization. And we're currently focusing on creating an accessibility toolkit and establishing another EDI survey to release to our staff to figure out ways that we can improve our EDI practices. Thank you to everyone who came to the tour of University Commons and gave feedback on the building. Y'all were great. I loved all your questions. Stride started last week, and Joanie and I and Daniela are actually mentors for the program. And I got to give a presentation at their very first session about my experience in student governance. That was really great. I also met with a fine arts professor to discuss getting student art within SUB. So we're currently in the process of doing that. And hopefully trying to display more art in SUB. And lastly, earlier today, we met with the University of Calgary Students Union exec team today and went over all of our goals. But if you do have any questions, please don't hesitate to email me. But yeah, thanks.
Thank you. May we please have your report, Christian?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just pulling up my notes here. So yeah, the first thing, again, I wanted to give a shout out to VP Villoso and VP Foge and for the residential school memorial, but also to President Montero and VP Foge and all the volunteers who helped with BTR. I know it feels like a lot of time has passed by, but that also happened since our last council meeting. So it was unfortunate, but couldn't break the record, but it's the friends we made along the way that mattered, right? moving on, I had an opportunity with a bunch of other counterparts across the country to meet with MP Marie-Françoise Lalonde, who is the parliamentary secretary to the Minister of Immigration. So they tend to represent the minister in the House of Commons with kind of any question, as well as like liaise with them on issues regarding that portfolio, talking about international students issues. So specifically, as I mentioned earlier in the CASA presentation, with elimination of the need for work permits, expanding work hours, or elimination of other types of barriers to work, but also consideration of international student experience in various nomination programs or express entry points. So those are some of the things we've been pushing for the minister, for the MP to push to the minister and cabinet, but also to take a look at, as they're also like looking to reform that department. Next up, the execs and I had the opportunity to meet with Ravina Sangera, who is the one of the folks at the acting associate dean of students. And so we got a chance to talk about our various goals that we've campaigned on, but I had the chance to talk about specifically looking at rooms for mental health, virtual therapy sessions, as well as how we can improve cultural competency within counseling and destigmatization of counseling on campus. So looking forward to the good work that will be coming out from that. And also I had the opportunity last Thursday to travel down to Camrose to meet with the president of the Augustana Students Association with their local MLA, Jackie Lovely, to talk about how we can address the transit situation that is going down for students in that region. As mentioned, as many of you may or may not know, right now there is no affordable public transit between Camrose and Edmonton. So a lot of the students in that region, if they do not have a car or a friend who can drive, are having to pay huge amounts in taxi rides, close to the price of over $100 to come to Edmonton and access a lot of the service on North Campus, or just maybe experience nightlife that might be lacking there. So we're working with...
I apologize. That concludes your 2 minutes. And next up is Gurleen. Please go ahead.
Hi, everybody. So as previously being mentioned, so these past 2 weeks have been really eventful with some important events, as you already know, about the residential school memorial and also Break the Record. Other than that, I had so many meetings these weeks. Some of them were like my first meetings, for example, the Standing Committee on Convocation. So we discussed some strategies with which we can make the convocation experience better for students for fall convocation. And something interesting that you might not already know, that for convocation, they select an artwork which they give to all the graduates, and so the copy of it to all the graduates. So if you're interested in submitting artwork for that, so if your artwork gets selected, you'll get, I think, $2,500 for that, which is really cool, and your artwork will be distributed to all the graduates, which is really great. So let me know if you're interested. I can share the link with you. Other than that, I had COFA meetings where we discussed the learning experiences of students and what problems they are facing and what problems they are hearing from the students in terms of classroom learning experiences. And today I also had the meeting with the Center of Teaching and Learning, CTL, to take all those concerns forward to CTL so they can take it to the university and find ways of solving those. I had a meeting with the university, undergraduate research initiative, a follow-up. So we are planning to have FERCA, which is the Festival of Undergraduate Research and Creative Activities at SUB this year, so we can engage more students. I'm currently figuring out the dynamics for that. We are also exploring how we can involve more international students into undergraduate research, because from the current survey data, international students are very interested in research, but very less of them are currently involved. There are some barriers. For example, some research grants are not available for international students, and sometimes it doesn't go with the requirements by the immigration. Like, for example, they're just allowed to work 20 hours and all that stuff. So we will be meeting with UAI and URI, like collective meeting, to explore ways how we can help navigate those challenges going forward.
I apologize, your 2 minutes is up. Thank you very much. And Abner, please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Hello, Council. I hope all of you had a chance to read my report. I'll give you a brief overview, but first, you know, I just wanted to, one, give a shout out to my team and to all of you. I was reflecting on just this past September and the past Septembers we've had at the U of A and how much all of us have done in this last month. Week of Welcome, the Residential School Memorial, Break the Record. There's been a lot of hours put in and a lot of work done. So thank you to everyone who's been doing so much work, to my team for all of your hard work, knowing that it's a big adjustment coming from being completely online to being back in person again. Break the Record is the first thing I'll start with in understanding we didn't get there, but it was a huge success. 4,967 students, to be exact, that we calculated to be there to create community on campus. And I'll leave it at that. And I'll just say that there was one student who wrote, I don't know if you've heard of UAlberta, but it's a blog that the University of Alberta runs for students to be able to share stories. And one student wrote about their experience coming to Break the Record and about dodgeball at the U of A. And if you have a chance, give it a read, because it was really, it really caught my eye. It was really interesting and made me realize why we do what we do to create community on campus. Had a meeting with the Board of Governors, the Board of Learning, Research, and Student Experience Committee, which we covered a number of topics, the sexual violence policies that were at GFC, and getting to reiterate a lot of those concerns again that Joanie raised in that GFC meeting. Moving to University Commons, we had a tour. It was a great opportunity. Thank you to all of you who came out for that tour, who got to hear some of the work that the university is doing on building this new place. And I hope you had a chance to provide some feedback. And me and Gerline have started up work again. So previously in last year, we were doing some work on work integrated learning, or I was doing some work on work integrated learning and how we improve structural supports for students who have difficult terms, or financial supports for students who may find themselves in situations where they're, you know, trying to support themselves while they're in Edmonton, but also not in Edmonton if they have a placement that's outside for only a short period of time. So we're continuing that work with the Provost Fellow for Experiential Learning on campus, and we'll have some updates for you soon. And then finally, myself, Vice President Fo Tang and Councillor Fateh got a chance to go to Forward Slash, which is a conference put on by Edmonton Global, which is an economic group in Edmonton dedicated to trying to create innovation entrepreneurship. And we were really there in our capacity to promote student entrepreneurship, student innovation, work integrated learning, and how we can address some of these core issues that the students are facing in the community.
Okay, thank you. That concludes your 2 minutes. And with that, that brings us to the end of executive reports. The next item of business is board and committee reports. So may we please have the report of the audit committee chair?
Hi, everyone. So for audits, we've just been going through like supporting the FAM renewals. There's quite a few this year, so that's going to get ramped up within the next little while. So we're just going to be like scheduling when FAMs will come in. I'll be working on that with Christian. We're also just like working on our COFA financial workshop that'll be coming up within the next 2 weeks here, and just introducing ourselves to our allocated audits. The audit cycle actually starts in December. So like that's when our first deadline is. So prior to that, we also have two presentations. We have one from KPMG and we also have one from Student Group Services that'll be coming to present on how we can integrate some of the supports for SRAs between like the SRA specialist and the work that audit's been doing. So between FAMPs, presentations, and audits, we've had a lot going on. So if you have any questions, please feel free to message me.
Thank you very much. May we please have the report of the Bylaw Committee Chair?
Yes, you may. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So Bylaw Committee met last Thursday evening. We came to a consensus on the answers that the Speaker had requested regarding amendments to Bylaws 100 and 2300, along with the processes and timelines for both for his report back to Die Board. Brief outline kicking off the review and amendment process pending approval of second reading of Bill 1, along with the timeline thereof. We went over DFU renewal plebiscites. We've got Campus Recreation Enhancement Fund coming up this year as the sub-renovation fund I'm a little fuzzy on, so I'm going to have to nail that down a little bit. The DFU renewal referendum for APER, given that they had an unsuccessful renewal plebiscite earlier in the spring. Faculty Association membership fees, the Business Students Association, Education Students Association, Association de l'Université de la Faculté Saint-Jean, as well as the Residence Association fee renewals for Lister Hall Students Association, Hub Community Association, and Association des Residents de la Faculté Saint-Jean.
Met with the FAB chairs of FAB chairs today over lunch, with FAB being both Fabulous and the chairs of Finance, Audit, and Bylaw. We hashed out some goals and priorities that reside in the overlapping portion of the Venn diagram that is Finance, Audit, and Bylaw. And I brought forth my initial work regarding governance restructuring task force recommendation, restructure students council, as a discussion item to council administration committee earlier today to solicit feedback on if and how we proceed with that recommendation when we start our bylaw 100 amendment.
Thank you, Levi. May we please have the report of the CAC chair?
All right, thank you. I'll skip like a super in-depth update, mostly because there isn't too much, but I will give you all three reminders. In the CAC agenda from 2 weeks ago, there was two documents there. The first was a standing order review. Thank you to everybody who started filling that out. That is your chance to suggest anything for changing the rules of council, which are the standing orders. So please go in and put those in. We're going to set a tentative deadline of next council. So you have 2 weeks to go read through the standing orders and put in all of your suggestions. Then we'll start discussing those at CAC and move to hopefully have a new set of standing orders approved fairly soon. The second item in there was a very quick Google form about the council office. I would really appreciate it if you could all fill that out. That'll kind of guide us on where to go with that and how to set that up to be most optimal for council. And last but most importantly, I really need everyone's attention on this. For council mentorship, we currently have 6 mentors signed up and 16 mentees signed up. So we really need more people because we don't want to be turning people away. If we look at our by-elections right now, it's a good example of why we don't want to be turning people away from governance. So I will resend the link to everybody probably tomorrow morning. It's not a huge time commitment. I get you're all very, very busy people. This is a really good chance to give back and really just have a few chats with people who are interested in governance, show them what it's like, kind of tour them around a council meeting, bring them to a council meeting so it's not quite as intimidating a space. It's a really good opportunity for that type of thing. So please, if there's any way you can, sign up for council mentorship. Myself and Milan would very much appreciate it. So more info on that from me tomorrow. But you should have gotten the link a few weeks ago anyhow.
Thank you very much. May we please have the report of the executive committee?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Speaker. So I'll just cover a few things that we've been discussing at executive committee. Christian mentioned that we had a meeting with the new Associate Dean of Students, Ravina. So we were discussing as a group how we're going to be approaching sharing some of our goals and priorities that Ravina has expressed interest in wanting to support us in. So that was one. We've been discussing in our, and you'll see this as well, one of the items on the agenda today, but a statement for Mahsa Amini and the situation in Iran. So that's another thing we've been discussing at executive. And the last one is around the possibility of doing a town hall with the executives, trying to determine the best time of the year to do that, but giving an opportunity for students to come and ask questions, but also talk about some key areas that may be of interest to students as well.
Thank you very much. May we please have the Finance Committee report?
Yeah, so Finance Committee hasn't met yet, but we will be having a meeting this Friday. If you're interested, it's at 1 p.m. online. We'll be having our monthly 3-hour-long meeting on Tuesday to go over a bunch more bylaw changes. But FAB chairs met today. It's the proudest thing I've ever done this year. Finance, audit, and bylaw chairs. So Levi pretty much talked about what we did, but I just wanted to put that out there. Thank you.
Fabulous. Thank you. May we please have the report of the nominating committee?
Yeah, so nominating committee is trucking along. We have finished most nominations up now. I believe all that's left is one student group appointment. However, once again, in that case, we already had a candidate for that situation. So he'll most likely be on the next order paper. So yeah, I'm really happy to see all committees are up and functioning. Moving in for the rest of the term, have we had question period? No? Okay, so in question period, I wanted you all to, how much time do I have left? I'm so sorry.
You have just under a minute 30.
Okay. Cool. So what I wanted to discuss as a council was that I wanted to see, especially for NomCom, it does not make sense the process right now, because the problem with us allowing for appointment to start in May is that committees will not be set up till August or September. Even that and that 1 month and those, once again, what should happen from a proper procedural overview is that we should be selecting candidates during the January to April scene and then getting those committees up and running May 1st. That should be the goal. I know that we have elections during January to April. People may be busy. People may be starting summer jobs. People may be graduating. But at the same time, too, it's a $14 million organization. So I think it's really important for us to have people ready to go, committees set up to go, and everything for us to make sure so we don't have a backlog, because Sustainability and Capital Fund, the deadline for that committee, the first round is June 15th. But as NomCom, our first meeting, I believe, was June 1st. So we obviously would not be able to have adjudicators ready for that. So either we need to procedurally change how Sustainability and Capital Fund committee set up, or we need to change how NomCom selects people. But please, for the Senate, I hope this year we can do something. I can see I'm out of time. Please share your thoughts in question period. I would really love to hear your thoughts. Thank you so much, Christian, for being lenient.
You actually have 10 seconds left. I was just getting ready.
I'm sorry. Let me keep finished. Yeah, I would be really, really appreciative. Yeah, like if you have any thoughts on this, you can always chat with me too. So thank you so much.
And that was perfect. Thank you. May we please have the report of the policy committee?
Hello, policy committee met last week to come up with a definitive time to meet for the rest of the semester, but we also just had updates on consultation plans for the rest of our policies this year, as well as just how we intend to make sure we're fulfilling the consultation that was requested by council on in regards to the campus policing safety and security policy.
Thank you very much. And Alex is not here. Okay, so no Board of Governors report today.
I had a point of clarification. So the motion I made earlier today to special order my item, it was the top of general orders, right?
That was not specified, no.
Okay. So I unfortunately have RA training at 9 p.m. I wanted to see if I could specify that now. Would I have to make another motion?
You would, and I would also just ask that you wait until the end of reports.
Okay. Oh, so I know reports.
We still have a few more committees. ARC, is there a member of ARC that is able to present or report? Joanie?
Yeah, so ARC did meet. As of right now, the chair has advised all members to go through the ARC report so they can actually go through the recommendations and familiarize with themselves with that. We are also in the process of reviewing standing orders to make sure we can change the language specifically for section 2.7 when it talks about having an elder to be able to actually move any sort of like new business, and maybe moving in regards to talking about like encouraging it, being encouraged to have an elder there, but we can still approve any other business. And the chair has also found a elder for the committee, First People's House elder Francis Whiskey Jack. So we will be inviting him to the committee, and that's all.
Okay, thank you very much. SCFC will be meeting soon, but has not yet. Student Group Committee Chair, Jaden, do you have a report for us?
No report, but I can give a little update. During our last meeting, we went over kind of the investigation process, and we have now been sent from CELIN the first investigation, and we'll be kind of conducting that and our kind of ruling throughout the next few meetings. That's all I have to say.
Okay, thank you. Sustainability Committee.
Bean? That's me filling in for Milan and when he's gone. We didn't have quorum at the last meeting, so we weren't really able to do anything, but we did have a lot of discussions. So mostly what we're going to be focusing on is the sustainability recommendations, and that's pretty much it for now. And then possibly looking into the future into making it a permanently standing committee. But that is after we finish everything else. And hopefully we should have enough for quorum now, because we have, I think, 3 student at larges coming for next week's meeting.
Okay, thank you very much. And finally, Translation Committee, Gabriella.
Yeah, so there's not much to report right now. But for next meeting, we should have more student at large members joining us. So we will hopefully be a full committee starting next meeting.
Okay, thank you very much. And that brings us to the end of board and committee reports. Haroon?
Yeah, council, I'm very sorry. I meant to specify this, but my bad. I was just talking to Adrian. Adrian said that the motion for August stand is going to be tabled. So I'm just requesting that we suspend standing orders to place my motion, what's called, to be the first one we deal with after general orders, just before Councillor Singh's motion. I believe that Councillor Singh is in support of this.
Okay, yes. I don't want to spend a lot of time on this. Is there anyone that wants to speak in opposition to this? Okay, I will just look at for a second for our records. I see Chanpreet seconds. Okay, and I will consider that passed unanimously. So it will be at the top of general orders. Okay. Okay, so we will move to our next item of business, which is open forum. Are there any guests of council wishing to ask questions? Any particular order you'd like to go in? Okay, please just use the microphone. And I don't think you've asked a question yet. So please just introduce yourself and say whether it's a question for which you have 30 seconds or a comment for which you have 2 minutes.
So my name is Lily Polenchuk. I'm the staff reporter for The Gateway. And I have a question directed for Levi. Can I begin? Yeah, okay. So you applied to appeal Dye Board hearing HA07 regarding Haroon Ali, even though according to Dye Board, you are not a party to HA07 and you do not have the right to appeal this decision as you are neither an intervener nor a respondent in this hearing. And in addition to that, the deadline for appeals has passed. So my question is regarding all of that, why did you try to appeal this decision?
Thank you for the question. When I had applied, I was going based on the standing that's outlined in the Dye Board protocols and in bylaw. I had no idea they were going to reject the appeal based that I was not a party to that. They were going based on Canadian case law, and in years past, Dye Boards have either followed case law or have issued it. And so there's nothing in bylaw that says you have to be, and that's the understanding that I was under when I applied.
Okay, thank you very much. Are there any further questions or comments, Katie? And again, please just introduce yourself.
So my name is Katie Teeling. I'm the opinion editor at The Gateway, and I actually have a question for Mark Dumichel. So I know you're going to talk about honorariums later, but I was just wondering if you have an estimate for how much they could be.
No, it depends on what kind of direction council wants to set with them, as I've outlined in the report that I attributed to council earlier today. It depends on a lot of factors, so I do not have an estimate. The previous time we had an honorarium, it was about, I want to say about $30,000 to $35,000 per year.
Did you have a follow-up? No.
Point of order, Mr. Speaker.
Yes. And
sort of procedure. I submitted an agenda, the report that the general manager prepared for our discussion, so it could be made public. But that item was not attached to the agenda, and I was not informed by the staff on why the item was not attached.
It wasn't.
I submitted it myself for the item. So Courtney, I basically submitted the report that Mark prepared for the council on honorarium as an information item, but it was not attached to the agenda.
I put everything that was sent on the agenda to the order paper. So everything that was made available to me is on the late ads.
Could you check the form?
So Mark.
Okay.
So if I'm a point of information, Mr. Speaker, and for the governance staff, if something is submitted after late ads, it would be on the next agenda, correct? So the answer would be it'll be on the next agenda, correct?
So if it was submitted by the late ads deadline, it would go on the late ads.
It was not submitted by the late ads deadline.
Oh, okay.
I think it was submitted somewhere around 11 or 12, before 1. Could you check the form, Courtney, or we could just make it public?
So at this moment, I am currently screen sharing. Unless we want sensitive information revealed to everybody in council, I would not suggest that.
Mark, is there something that's stopping us from sharing that report though? If I could. To public, not just to the council.
There's nothing secret in it.
Yeah.
It's actually publicly shared on Google, so.
Okay, so yeah. I am able to confirm that the report is not on the late ads. We will investigate. This is a few items of business down, but thank you for raising it, and we will
look. But considering it's not public, so I'll just share it with Gateway. Because it can be public, as Mark Demichel mentioned, so I'll just share it with Gateway for their sake.
You are welcome to do that, yes. Okay, any other questions or comments from guests? Katie, please go ahead.
So this is a question to the execs, whichever one of you can answer. In a recent Instagram post about Break the Record, the Students Union referenced a future attempt saying, quote, "This is not over. We hope you'll join us for the next attempt at this record." When are you planning on reattempting another Break the Record?
Thank you for the question. We still have to explore that with our staff and ensure the capacity of that. But after talking to a few people, I mean, in the past, Break the Record has been done year after year. So we've built capacity over this past year to have more students out, to hear about it, to share that it's happened. And we would like to do it next year. I think this year it worked out really well doing it in September because students were on campus. And it was during U of A days where there were a lot of other people in the community here on campus as well. But that's not to say that we could do it at a different time in the future and next year, but we would like to do it again next year.
Okay, thank you very much. Lily, please go ahead.
I have a question as a follow-up to Katie's question for the execs. So there was a multitude of concerns from students as the assumption that there was a lot of money spent on Break the Record and it wasn't broken and there's talk of doing it again. And students feel as if though that money could go towards something better and more helpful for their education. So I was just wondering if you do plan to do another Break the Record, how would you address that concern potentially?
Yeah, so thank you for the question. Our approach in wanting to do Break the Record in the first place was to create community on campus. We set soft targets for ourselves to get to 5,000 people, knowing that for the past 2.5 years, we haven't had anybody on campus and haven't really had any events to create community. We knew that we needed to do something where students can just come and have fun. So I do think that the investment into doing Break the Record was definitely worthwhile and was much needed. And I've only seen an outpour of positivity coming from all the students who've shared that they feel a part of the U of A community now. As for how much money we spent on the event itself, roughly about half of what we would spend towards Week of Welcome, but a lot of what we spent was related to the cost of goods to get the resources, to get the dodgeballs, to get the t-shirts for students to be able to have as a memoir for the event, and also sponsorships and contributions from the university, from the Graduate Student Association, from other stakeholders to make this possible and not see it as a burden for students, as a way of creating community for them.
Okay, thank you. Any further questions from guests? Okay, seeing none, we will now move to our next item of business, which is question period. Are there any members wishing to ask questions or make comments? I see Lionel, Haroon, and Abdul online, Simran, Leo. Okay, and Lionel a second time. Just put them at the end. And Julia, Lionel, please go ahead.
Okay, so this question is directed at the Vice President Academics, Edgar Ling. So I'm a little bit surprised, like this thing did not actually appear in your report, but if council remembers from 2 weeks ago, so we were talking about practicums and how students could be compensated or like get their tuition reduction. So thank you for your work in it. But I believe that should there be like a report on the current information we have identified, like we have researched about practicums across different faculties to be presented to the council in a future council meeting. Because like, because I know like you're trying to like make posts on perks, right? And to consultate, to do consultation with students, because like, which I have told you, like saying that perks is not enough. We should go for like some Google form or go to the FAs. So yeah, so I think like, I'm just asking like how, like we need to like, to move ahead, because like I'm very deeply concerned at this point, because like you were saying that, well, we pay money because we
sorry can't... to cut you off line. So we do limit questions to 30 seconds, so I'm just going to ask you to state your question directly, but also just a reminder to council, you can submit written questions if you want to include more context. Okay, so please state your direct question.
Yeah, it has been stated. So like, do you actually present a report to the council on what we know now, and also like how we're going to advance with the consultation with the post other than perks?
Yeah, thank you for the question. I did do some research in terms of practicums, but the issue is they are so wide, like widely spread, and they differ like faculty to faculty and also department to department, like the also program to program. So like it's so much diverse. Like so we couldn't find any reliable data in terms of what students are like, which problems students are actually facing. So I had a conversation with our director of research, and we decided that we will do a survey to analyze like what students are facing and which issues are huge. Because like the things that were mentioned earlier, for example, students are paying even when they're not taking courses, but like in some cases they're actually getting the credits and also support. So we are trying to figure out like, is this the issue that students are not getting enough support during practicums, and what the actual issue is the students are facing with it, so we can go forward and advocate for it. And as you said, like having this survey widely available, I am having conversation about that. Like we will be having it on perks, it is on the way, but like we will try to also navigate the ways how we can like reach out to faculties and also make it known that there is a survey available, so we can get more engagement from students and get better feedback. And the report will always like only be possible once we get the survey results out and we figure out like what the actual issue is that we need to advocate for. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you very much. Haroon, please go ahead.
Yeah, so it's unfortunate that I have to bring up this topic again, but I just wanna like hop off the comment, the question that the gateway asked Levi. I'm not making a question for Levi, I'm just making a statement. So yeah, once again, at this point, I think we all kind of wanna move on from the subject, but at the same time too, you know what I mean? It's really hard for me too when I'm continually being persecuted. And at this point, you know what I mean? Honestly speaking, it feels a tad bit vexatious, because the Dieboard report clearly stated I was eligible to serve on student council. And to continually have that questioned by my colleagues and by the chair of bylaw committee, especially when he's undergoing a massive review of bylaws, is a tad bit concerning and can be perceived reasonably as a conflict of interest by students. So I am politely asking for us all to move on and for us all to continue on doing the important work of council. I don't think spending time on these petty little things and keeping dragging them up from the past is going to help us at all. So yeah, I just would appreciate it if we can get back to helping students, because it's been a lot on students, especially these past 2 years, and it doesn't help to have our body continually fighting amongst ourselves. It does not look good, especially in a time right now where the provincial government is changing and where people are looking amongst students' unions, and where we have a clear winner of a UCP that is politically unstable. So I would caution us, and I would hope that we can show students value for dollar and actually fight for them rather than fighting amongst ourselves, would be my comments. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Abdul, please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This is more of a comment. So the SMS committee, like the social media subcommittee of CAC, was is planning to like have a constant introduction on their social media. And for that, a form was sent out to all the counselors. I know it's big, but you don't have to fill all of that if you don't, like, just some important things. And if you can, if the counselors can fill that, because I've just gotten 9 responses as of now. So that will be really helpful. Thanks.
Thank you, Abdul. Simran, please go ahead.
Yeah, so I have a quick question. So it's for Haroon, so the chair of the nominating committee. I know that you were looking for some feedback or questions. So my question is in regards to the timeline that you're suggesting, mainly because, so this year in particular, like a lot of the work in a lot of committees, I'll try and face you, and then a lot of the committees has been delayed very, very substantially, like to the point where no progress has been done and we're like 2 trimesters in, and a lot of it is attributed to them not being able to meet quorum, right? So my question is in regards to why weren't people able to be selected within the April to May timeline? And why weren't we able to get even a first meeting in August?
So unfortunately, we weren't functioning as a committee in April to May. I was not chair. Abner was chair of the committee. And Abner at the time during April, you were. I'm pretty sure you are.
Well, if you're referring to last year, then yes. But April to May, there was no chair of nominating committee until it was selected, until nominating committee met.
Sorry, does our term starts in May, right?
That is correct. I really don't want
The point was being was that we didn't meet as a committee till June 4th, right? So I was selected as chair, and I believe sometime in June. Our first actual meeting was June 15th.
All committees that were selected that could have only counselor-filled positions, they all had their first meeting in May.
I may be wrong on that. My apologies. What was it? So, yeah, the problem... Okay, we met on... Oh, my apologies. We met May 31st. So we met on the last day of May, right? So once again, the problem with that being is that committee, like, I know it's tough because we don't know who's going to be on committees, but the problem when you do that is that we're already a month behind. June is really essentially where we're setting up the committee. We're getting people knowing what the committee actually does. That's what time I spent me learning about what chairship is. By July, we actually started getting business along. We were able to get some nominations up. We just didn't have enough student interest. So what we decided as a committee was like, we can continue popping up these forms, but it's not going to be useful. What we want to do is we want to give opportunities to brand new, fresh students who are coming into campus. So we said, let's wait till September. Yes, that's going to hurt the operational side of it. But unfortunately, our hands are kind of tied because of the way the Sustainability and Capital Fund Committee is operating. Because by June 15th, that's the first round of adjudications required.
I apologize. That is the end of your 2 minutes. Leo, please go ahead.
Thank you. I think I already said this at recess to Levi, but but I'm just going to extend that a little bit here. So I just want to say this review for bylaws, I think it's very great. Plain language is needed on the bylaws so that more students can understand it. And as well, for all those vague vague clauses that constantly get caught and also misinterpreted can be changed. As we saw in the last 2 months of summer, we literally spent almost every single council meeting just talking about Haroon's eligibility. It was a deep waste of time. And it also caused a lot of rifts within council. So I'm glad that things are being addressed. So yeah, thank you.
Hey, thank you, Leo. Julia, please go ahead.
Yes, my question is actually to CAC Chair Adrian. It's not bad. Why? I just had a question in terms of the counselor mentorship program, because I don't know sort of how you folks are running it, but were you looking to get sort of execs to also put a name forward as mentors, or because it is like the counselor mentorship program, like if you do need 5 extra people, I know some.
Yeah, I think our
ideal was that we would all be counselors, but we're starting to run into a sticky situation where we kind of just need people. So Christian very generally mentioned that he might be able to as well. So hopefully we can actually expand that a little bit. But I'll have a chat with Milan and I'll let you know in that email that I send out tomorrow with all the info. I appreciate the offer. Thank you.
Thank you. Lionel, please go ahead.
Okay, my second question of the night. So this is directed at any VP who could answer this question, because just like the gateway asked, so like saying we're gonna say try to reattempt the BTR. So like so I just like noticed like online and from elsewhere that like we have problems this time with advertising the event, because a lot of people don't actually know about it until the very last end. Like, and also they have problems with storing their bags, because like they saw like a long line at the Butterdom, like, and then they just leave. So like that probably drove some people away as well. So like, what do you plan to improve from like saying like logistics and like storage and advertising when we are attempted again, so we actually make it? Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Lionel. So I think part of it was the timeline that we put out for ourselves. And I mean, it was a very ambitious timeline, having more time and now having a group of students. The biggest challenge is that the past BTR attempts, there was already a culture on campus of people knowing that this is happening. And we kind of phased that group of students out and had a whole new group of people who've never heard about Break the Record or knew really about the dodgeball culture at the U of A or anything like that. So we were essentially rebuilding from the ground up. A lot of the concerns that you've shared with us and things that students have told you, I appreciate you sharing a lot of that. Our team is still going to be debriefing. We haven't had a chance to do it yet, but we're going to be talking about all of those elements around the bag check, around a lot of those things that you raised, and making sure that, you know, it was a great learning lesson for us on how going forward when we do another big event or anything of that nature, how we can make sure things go smoothly. So we'll be talking about those things, figuring out how we're going to address them in the future so that it can be a smoother experience for people.
Hey, thank you very much. Adrian, please go ahead.
My question's either for Abner or Grilline. So at our last meeting of GSC, we approved an amendment to the expiration credits policy that would require programs committee to approve any exceptions that faculties are bringing. Do we know what the timeline is going to be for them bringing those exceptions and when kind of we would know which faculties are going to have those implemented? This might also just be something I missed at GFC. So if we want to talk about it after, we definitely can as well.
Yeah, so as far as we know, Adrian, we haven't had a chance to meet with the registrar's office. We actually have a meeting with them coming up. So we will be following up with them. Timeline hasn't been established. The goal is to have exploration credits ready on the timeline that Arwa mentioned, which is for next year. So the goal would be the governance cycle ends in June. Those things should be coming forward by then, because programs committee is not going to meet until September again, and exploration credits will be active at that point. So as we go through the process now, the stage of now until the end of this governance cycle will be, now we've established that, faculties are going to have to come forward and saying what kind of exemptions they want. And we're going to be having the conversations around making sure that we can maximize the amount of courses that students can use for exploration credits. Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much. Haroon, you have 50 seconds.
Awesome. Councilor Foreman, again, sorry. What was the intent of you filing the appeal?
Levi, please go ahead.
The purpose with any appeal, I thought they got the decision wrong and they decided they didn't.
Okay, thank you. Lionel, you have 20 seconds. If it's a comment, you can do it quickly.
Okay, quick comment. So just on like what Grilline replied to me. So I think on the student support, like we're receiving for practicum. So because like the practicum advisor in my faculty, just for my faculty, they have canceled all meetings with the students that are going to do their practicum next semester, which is a very serious issue in applying to their practicum and the entire process. And also I believe that I will need short answers on if consultations will happen apart from perks, because not everyone is on perks every day. And also I believe that it should be widely available like in a Google form or whatever other form that we could give it to you, like essays and stuff.
Apologies. Yeah. That brings us to the end of the 15 minutes allotted for question period. Council can extend at the request of 5 members. However, we have 19 minutes left. So I will leave it to council to decide how we want to spend that time. Is there any request to extend? Okay, seeing none, we will move to our next item of business, which is board and committee business. And the first item, or the only item rather, is Augustana. So as Adrian mentioned, we've run into more scheduling difficulties. We were notified that Augustana does have an event on that Saturday. They seem to be a very busy campus. So I would look favorably upon tabling this item to the next meeting. Levi, a motion to that effect. Second, Christian. Okay, I want to get through this really quickly. Is there any opposition to this motion? Okay, no opposition. Okay, so this motion is tabled to our next meeting. Oh, Abdul, if you can make your comments quickly, I will allow that. Please go ahead.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Sorry, Council. Like, there has been a lot of difficulty scheduling. ASA, like, they had their event and they just want to give like SU proper time and to like avail the opportunity that they're coming there. And we are really good hosts, so that's why they're having some problems. So they want to give you like the best time and the best experience they can. And I'm really sorry for these problems.
Okay. Thank you for that context. Members on Zoom, please try to speak, like actually speak, even if you're interrupting. We can't see the chat all the time, so it's easy for us to miss things. With that, I'll consider that motion to table the motion to the next meeting still in effect. So that will come back at our next council meeting. Moving to general orders, the first motion is Chanpreet's motion to discuss the remuneration / honorarium report as prepared by the general manager, Harun.
My motion should be on top of that.
Yes, the motion to special order. Is there any opposition to switching the order of these two motions?
I thought we did a vote already.
Oh, did?
Yeah, we did.
My apologies. Okay. So, to be clear, the current motion is Harun and Chanpreet's motion to condemn the violence perpetrated by the Iranian regime against women and the people of Iran. Let's not have any disruptions right now, Council. The current motion is to condemn the violence perpetrated by the Iranian regime against women and the people of Iran. Harun, would you like to introduce?
Yes, absolutely. I just want to first off thank all the members who voted in favor of this, of allowing us to deal with this today. I think it's really important for us to condemn this. I think we've all seen what's been going on. So just I really hope that this is a moment for us all to reflect and for us to show students, especially Iranian students, that we stand with them here on campus. That is the extent of my comments.
Okay, thank you very much. Christian, please go ahead.
I was going to motion to go in camera for this discussion, if it's possible with council. Specifically, the reason I say this is just recognizing, and it's a concern that's been brought to me by some students, is when discussing topics like this, especially relating to countries that have a history of maybe banning people from coming back to their countries if they're outspoken against maybe the decisions of those countries, especially if records of this are on the digital web, it can have an impact. And a lot of students I know have said that they are worried that being outspoken about an issue like this, even if they are wanting to be supportive, can impact if their parents want to go home and support, can go home and return back to the country. So I recognize the need, but I just also want to protect maybe those within this room who might also be impacted by that.
Yeah, so that motion is in order. I'll look for a seconder. I see Lionel. Harun, did you have a point that you wanted to raise? Oh, okay. That is in order. Again, I don't want to get into a discussion on this. Christian gave some reasoning behind this motion to move in camera. I'll just look for opposition by a show of hands. Is anyone opposed to moving in camera to discuss this motion? Okay, seeing none, we are now in camera. Guests